You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Clarissa Burt. Clarissa told me that she wanted to talk about reinventing herself in her 60s. And I knew I definitely wanted to have that conversation because I've had a version of that conversation with people who are in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, and their 50s. But this is the first time I've had somebody bring it up when they're in their 60s. We explore the concept of reinvention and the determination that it takes to follow your passion at any age. So just today, I actually learned that there's a word for these age-related social norms. It's called a social clock. So now you know. Along the way, we also chat about living a non-toxic life, the challenges and rewards of being a master connector, what it means to age gracefully, and navigating the effect of self-esteem when you're a person who's always in the limelight. Are you ready? I'm totally ready. Let's hit it. Clarissa Burt, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
You know I am.
I'm so excited. All right. So I ask everybody when they get here, what part of the world do you call home these days?
Well, I live in Phoenix, Arizona, but I was born in Philadelphia.
Born in Philadelphia, and you've lived all over the world. So we'll talk more about that in a little bit. In a second, we're going to get to the topic of the day. But before we dive in, I'd love it if you'd share with me and with the audience a little bit about you, not about your family and not about your work, but something that interests you, a hobby, a pastime, a passion project, something you're willing to share.
Yeah, I'm really big right now on just living a non-toxic life. So I've been in the kitchen for years now, just making my own cosmetics.
Yeah.
And lip balms and, toothpaste and mouthwashes and, you name it, creams, balms, salves. I do it all. The best thing I do is chapstick, and everybody wants my chapstick right now, which is really great. So,
all right. So living a non-toxic life by making your own cosmetics. Wow. I love
Being
that.
Really mindful about plastics. I'm a tea drinker, so I'm really careful now about, the actual tea bag.
Yep. I read about that.
Bag, all the things.
Yeah.
So just really keeping up on, on what it is, what it really means to be, living in a non-toxic life.
That's amazing. All right. So the topic of the day that you proposed is starting over in your 60s. Are you ready to talk about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. I love it. All right. So you submitted that and I went to your website and I was looking up more about you. I'm very excited to have this conversation because I don't think, starting over and restarts and resets, that's a conversation that I have with people all of the time, right?
Yeah.
But we have this really interesting topic, and I got these words from a podcast that I listened to on my walk just this morning, actually, like a social clock, like a preconception of when we're supposed to do things. The idea of starting over in your 60s is not one that I think that most people have on their to-do list, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
One of the things that I just want to say is you have a phenomenal and amazing resume. You've done a lot of things in your life.
I've been around a long time.
Well, and more to go, right? Well, this is the way to do it, right? If you, Mae West, if you do it right, you only need one shot at this, right?
One shot, right, exactly.
So in your younger years, I'm going to go through these. Tell me if I mess any of these up because I did my own research, all right? You were a model and an actress.
I was.
Yeah, a producer and a philanthropist.
Did that.
You won Celebrity Survivor. I don't even know what to do with that little piece of information there. That is amazing. Cookbook author.
Yes.
Cookbook author. All right. So all of these things, that's just a smattering. There's many, many, many more. My question is, what do you mean about starting over in your 60s? You've got
I think it's
all
more
these
of a reinvention. It's more of a
reinvention
than it's starting over. When I was 60, I'll be 66 in next week. And so when I was 60, I had always wanted to have my own multimedia platform, television, podcast, and a digital magazine. And that's exactly what I pulled together. So in the limelight media, because I basically have been on stage or in front of a microphone in some way my entire life. And so that's kind of why the name came about, and it kind of clicked and it worked. And I just love it. I love being in front of a camera. I love being on a stage, a microphone. It's just home for me. And the idea that I was able to work on television in Italy and then pull, kind of when I got back to the States in 2005, I was doing other things, and before I kicked the bucket, I do want to start this multimedia platform. It's basically for entrepreneurial women.
All right. So I love the way you said that, because one of the things that's going through my mind these days, which I don't talk about on the podcast because the audience of the podcast is not people who are building multimedia platforms, but one of the things that's bouncing around is, what do these words even mean? Like, what is a podcast? What is a show? What is all of those things? And so multimedia platform, TV, which I would call streaming, but not because I know anything, just because that's the way it goes in my head. Okay. And then podcast, and then a digital magazine.
Magazine.
Yeah, which targets, those are the three ways that people consume
Subscribe.
information.
It's what Oprah does. It's what Martha Stewart does. They all do the same thing. They're on TV, they have a podcast, I have a digital magazine. It's just media tout court. And so I just, I love it. I mean, it's what I really, really love. And so yeah. So that's what I, started up when I was 60 when I started it, and it really doing really, really well. Of course, it was during COVID, so that was an issue. And then at the same time, my mother got into a really bad car accident in 2022, so that was 3 years ago, I guess we are at now. Yeah.
So
So I
you've
had.
been doing this for, so it's 6 years ago that you began this reframe with
And
the.
because it's me and me, me, myself, and I, solopreneur, it's, the business will take a hit when something happens in your life. So I've had to relent a little bit and do, because I was doing other things. I just got back from 9 months in Italy, where I was on the Big Brother show. And so there are different things that, keep me a little bit more away from the business as of this in this last year. But it's still there, and I'm still working on it. It's not cranking the way it was some time ago. But life happens, and that's the other thing that you really kind of need to understand when you're talking about reinvention, because, oh well, life's going to happen. I'm the only caretaker for my mother, and she has COPD, and in the accident, she broke her ribs and her sternum, and we went through it. We had a tough go for a couple of years keeping her alive.
No, absolutely. We've done several episodes on this about the challenges of caretaking. And one of the things that has gone through my mind in several of those interviews is that this is something that nobody ever seems to be prepared for, even if you have the idea that you're going to be the caretaker. And one of the theories I have in the back of my mind is that caretaking today in 2025 for our parents who are older than us is not the same as it was maybe in 1960 and 1970. Like, this could be an entirely different experience than our
What do
parents.
you mean by that? Help me understand.
So we're living longer. And so they're older, and the things that they're going through are different. So I think of this. I mean, this is a total tangent, right? But I think of this all the time. I just made my annual appointments for like mammogram and all of these things, which for some reason is five appointments and not one, right? And I think back to when I was in college and my grandmother, and her experience. She didn't have any of those appointments. Like that, it didn't exist. It wasn't like. She was diagnosed with breast cancer because she was in pain and there was an obvious like thing. So like the whole like sort of reality of how we're aging and how we care for each other is very, very different. And
I
so
just had to now start, learn how to navigate this whole Medicare thing. That's new.
new.
I'm doing all the last couple of weeks, I'm doing a whole bunch of doctor's appointments just because this, that, and the other thing. And so that's really kind of new. And yeah, it's very interesting. It's also interesting when you look at it from the other perspective, as a child, I'm taking care of, obviously, of my mother. It's the right thing to do. I didn't have children. So that's a whole nother topic of coming up on as we age and moving forward, and what's got what you know what's the plan, like, and the plan is keep yourself as non-toxic and as healthy as you possibly can by doing the things you need to be doing to keep yourself healthy, eating properly, getting enough sleep, getting the exercise and all of that, staying away from smoking, alcohol as much as you can, you know, that kind of thing, because you know, alcohol, there's the now the connection between alcohol and you know, dementia and all, you
All
know, the
bad things.
all bad things. So there you go. So just, you know, just being able to be mindful about taking care of yourself and getting the
Right.
toxic out of, you know, being, you know, keep yourself in the loop about what is and what's not toxic these days, because there's, you know, 10 of them popping up every week.
It does seem like it's a hard thing to keep on top of. I agree with that. And it shifts, like things that one day they tell us that something is healthy, and a few years
That's
down the
right.
road they might change their mind.
That's right.
All right, so 60, if you're looking at the old-fashioned social clock, right, the societal clock, 60 would be when people are telling you it's time to slow down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a time to, you know, step back to, well, I moved to Arizona, or I live in Florida. Those are popular decisions, right? But you did not do that. You said, nope, what we're going to do is we're going to start a multimedia company. What was going on in your life at 60 that had you thinking that this was the thing you were wanted to
It was
do?
just time. It was just time. I just, you know, I was home. I had come home in 19, sorry, in 2005. By like 2000 and whatever it was, I just, you know, I just said, you know, I want to get back to work. I mean, I had done enough that I didn't have to, you know, I had a lot put away in savings and investments and things. So I didn't have to kill myself to be finding jobs and that sort of thing, which was great. But I also wanted to be moving forward and being, you know, productive and doing something that was, that I, you know, love doing, which I love doing, and you know, and helping, basically it was helping a lot of other women out, learn how to be in media, on media, and promote their businesses, especially during COVID. It was crazy, you know,
Yeah.
crazy, because a lot of people, especially solopreneurial women and entrepreneurial women, you know, they always put promotion at the bottom of the list when it comes to how do I allocate the time during my day, because there's only so much time in the day that you can be working on your business. And I say working on your business and not working in your business. And most people are working in the business because there you go. There's only so much time in the day. And so, you know, really underlining and underscoring the importance of promotion should be at the top of the list, because you always want to be out front. You always want to be forefront. You always want to be reminding people that notwithstanding the, you know, difficult times, economy, COVID and the like, you're still here and you're still, you know, waving your flag. And so that's an important, I think, an important piece to anybody's business.
Yeah, and you have a lot of exposure being in front of the camera and being very visible. You have written a book about self-esteem. And so when I was reading about your history, you're pretty upfront that when you that this was a hurdle for you when you were a young adult stepping in front of the camera. I think you say that when you it was getting the first photos taken, you knew you wanted to do it, but that it was your there was
Yeah.
and one of the things that I think is really interesting is I do see this coming up in stories and biographies and just little vignettes about people who have a very public profile, celebrities.
Yeah.
And many people that they
Never
often
thought
will
they were good
say,
enough. They never thought
yeah,
they were good enough ever. Yeah. Like
yeah,
from Madonna all the way across the board, you know, we hear it from so many really strong, powerful women.
yeah. And so my question is, somebody who has walked it, you've actually lived this, and you've done it. You've led it very like, how did you balance these two forces of self-esteem and a very public career that, in times, was really fueled by how other people did see you? Like, it's one thing for somebody like me who is. You know, like when I'm going to the grocery store, I tell myself, I don't, what other people see me wearing doesn't matter. But when your job is having people take photos of you or being on Celebrity Survivor, that's a different thing. So tell us a little bit about that. How did you balance those things? How did you bring
I
them
think
together?
it was, I really do think that it was, that the idea of really wanting it outweighed all of the pain that it might take to get it, or the fear that it might take to get it, or the embarrassment or the rejection, because it's rife with rejection, that industry, you know. So just knowing that, you know, again, it's that whole just, you know, wanting it, really wanting it bad enough, and going through the rigors that it takes in order to see it happen. Or to make it happen. And I think that's really what it is. I come from, I think, good stock in the sense that my mother's a really strong woman, my grandmother as well. And so, you know, I think it was also, you know, Irish Catholics, you know, stoic and severe you know, put your best foot forward and chin is always up and shoulders always back and that kind of thing. So I think it was really some of the, you know, educative pieces that came from the family tribe, the familial tribe. And then the determination that I really want. You know, when I was a kid, and you'll remember this, we didn't have, the internet and computers and things. We had three channels on TV, and none of that was really saying anything about what I wanted to do. But there was a Sears catalog that came twice a year to the house. And that was my thing. I couldn't wait for that catalog to get there because I would just go right to the woman's section and take a look at the clothing and the models and the makeup and how they were posing. And that was my thing. That was my reference point. And as far as self-esteem is concerned, that was, we had three bookstores: Walden Books, Borders Books, and Barnes and Noble. And in the back, there was a teeny little section called self-help. And I'm talking about back in my day, right? And it might have been 40, maybe 50 books on those shelves. There weren't many more. And now I'm really proud to say that my book has been on the shelves in Barnes and Noble for the last 4 years and a year, 4.5 years. And right next to Brené Brown, Dr. Deepak Chopra, and Dr. Joe Dispenza, and which is a crowning moment for me, and I still pinch myself. But the idea now that it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and it's called the personal development section, right?
Personal development, right?
So, it's again, and it goes to prove the point that we're always looking for guidance, assistance, support, help, explanations, the reason why, all the things that I think goes back to the Garden of Eden, for God's sake. I mean, since man has been man and woman's been woman, that question has assists.
Probably, absolutely. So I think that that's really, really good. When, and I love the way you said that it's just that you wanted it enough that it was worth doing the work, because just wanting it and just having the dream probably isn't going to be enough. There's got to be the willingness to do the work. And there's like one little sentence, but in there are a million different things: figuring out what it is, trying it, being really willing to do those things. So did you get any pushback when you said began to tell people, when you were starting this project, did you get any pushback from the people around you that you were starting this media company, or were you surrounded by people who
Oh,
had to
no.
show you?
No. No, people were really kind of jacked, I think. They're really, I mean, the people that I knew, women especially, because I also had created a mastermind for the whole for a good portion of the women that I had networked with. And I think the other thing is that I'm a master connector and a good communicator, right? So, I mean, I'll walk into a room, not know anyone, and know everyone by the time I leave. I'll know everything that they do, and I'll be able to connect that woman with that woman, and she needs to, you need to know that girl over there in the corner, kind of thing, So it's kind of another part and parcel of the whole package with when it comes to media, PR, communications, and then casting a broad net.
I love that. I'm not the person who will walk into a room and meet every single person, but I always try and find that person to be next to, because I am the person who will walk into a room where I don't know anybody, and I will probably meet one or two people and spend a lot of time with that person, unless it's not a fit, and then I find a new person.
And
But
I think,
I'm.
you know what, Amy, I got to tell you, I think it's really my ADHD, because I can give you 2 minutes of small talk, and then after that, I'm not there anymore. So I got to move on.
Okay.
New stimulation, right? So it's not like I'm some networking superstar and I have it all figured out. It's that I think it's really, I got to go. Okay, give me your card. Got my card? Okay, I'll catch up with you next week. Bye, next.
And so for me, because I can have a conversation, and this is probably my Midwestern lineage, I can have a conversation about anything. I can have a conversation about carpet. I can do small talk as a professional. I can have a conversation about nothing for as long as you need me to. And my kids and my family give me a hard time. They're like, "All right, we don't actually need to talk to this person about this, Mom. Let's
Yeah,
move on."
Mom.
Right. Move on. All right. So that's a testament to the people who surround you with, because that is a very real obstacle that when you're launching something new, the perception of what are people going to think if I do this, and also the reality that sometimes you do tell people, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to try this." And sometimes people are like, "Well, is that actually a good idea?" So I think the fact that you didn't get a
Now, here's the
pushback is.
deal. You can either conform or transform. You got one of the two. So you conform to what everybody else is thinking, what everybody else is saying, what everybody else is doing. And I, again, as you've heard a million times, what everybody else thinks of us is none of our business, right? So, I mean, just in life is basically it's only one. We're not here that long. If you think about how long the earth has been here in the flash of a moment that our lives, we could be here 80 years, it's still a flash, in time. So it's like, let's get on with it. Let's move forward. We got
Move
stuff.
forward, but you had the choice. You could have like settled in and done, pickleball and shuffleboard and, and backed off. And you're like, nope, gonna make a difference. And I think that's worth commending and calling out. What do you think the words unrelated, but this came when I was writing this up, this came to my mind and I thought you'd be a wonderful person to ask this question. What do you think the words aging gracefully mean?
Oh wow, it means just, being really happy with who you are every day, being happy with what you see in the. And here's the other thing too. There are going to be some things you're going to take a look at and not, maybe not be so happy and not as happy as you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Maybe there's something you do about that, and maybe there's not. Maybe there's a more flattering eyeglass that you can wear. Maybe you have LASIK. Maybe you'll get lenses. All kinds of options there. Maybe you'll cut your hair. Maybe you'll keep it longer. Maybe you'll color it. Right? All kinds of options there. And so I think that the important thing is to have a really good relationship with the mirror. With the mirror, as you look at yourself, say, I really am feeling good with myself. I feel good notwithstanding the grays. I feel good, whatever that is means for you, right? And then again, taking really good care, knowing that you're getting the proper, again, the proper nutrition. I make, for example, I eat a lot of yogurt and I make my own yogurt. I make my own yogurt. I've made two batches over there right now. And I just learned this week of a new strain, new way of making it. I don't know if Dr. Brian William, I think it was, it did wheat belly and gut and gut health.
I read Wheat Belly many, many years ago.
Yeah, right. Okay, that doctor. And so his way of making yogurt, which is what I learned this week. So again, the education process, keeping up on how can I better this? Okay, because of different reasons, I have had to take five batteries of or five rounds of antibiotics in the last 16 months. That's not good.
Right, that's
I
tough on your
learned
body.
okay, so why the yogurt? Then I learned that there's an even stronger strain of yogurt that would be even healthier for your gut. By making it the way he makes it, which is with L-reuteri and L-get, there are a couple of different strains, if you will, I guess bacteria that he uses in. So I did that for the first time. I bought the machine. I bought this stuff, and so I have my first batch. I haven't tasted it yet, but just to give you an idea of what does your body need? What are you giving? What's keeping up on those sorts of things? Talking about
Absolutely.
the tea bag, the tea bag. It's a silly thing. But I don't use it anymore in my,
But
I
and
make
that's brand
my
new. How many years did you use tea bags though? Because I am not a
100,
tea drinker.
100,
I'm okay, yeah.
100, like
So,
forever. And I'm only a tea drinker. I lived in Italy for 30 years and I never had a coffee. So, I'm a tea
you're a
drinker.
tea drinker. I'm very Ted Lasso about my tea. I think that it tastes like dirty water. So I do the herbal like sweet teas, but it was a gobsmacking thing to read. It's like, oh, the tea bag is the problem. I'm like, oh, of course it is. The thing that we all love so much, like
I make my own toothpaste because of the fluoride. I make my own mouthwash because of all the
yeah.
things. So, getting rid of all as many of the things that have chemicals in them and that we know aren't good for us, and just going back kind of nature, back to nature, back to the basics.
Yeah.
There's not a darn thing wrong with, aloe vera juice or aloe vera gel and vinegar and apple cider. I make my own apple cider vinegar. I don't even go buy it. I make it. I'm telling you, I have more damn fun in that kitchen. People say, "What do you do for fun?" I go to my kitchen and I just have, that's what I do. I make my cosmetics, I make my creams, I make all the stuff, all the things.
But
So, yeah, as
that
much
is
as I
really,
can,
yeah, no,
as much
that's impressive. I'm very hands-on in my kitchen. I love, but I don't make my own cosmetics. And I also, so many of the things, but yogurt and cheese, other than I did do, it did make paneer out of defiantly, because I kept asking people where to buy it, and my friends were like, just make it. And I was like, no, I really
cheese,
think that life
cottage
too
cheese.
short for me to be making my own cheese. And they're like, it's
Yeah,
easy. And I was like,
it
oh,
is.
all
Yeah,
right. I'm
it really is.
but then
Kefir, kefir is another thing,
right.
really expensive. If you buy it in the store, all you have to do is go on Amazon and they sell the kefir grains. and it comes in a
Okay.
little packet, right? And then you start feeding it with milk, and all of a sudden you've got kefir in 48 hours, and you've got kefir. And so I love this stuff. I mean, this is like right up my alley. So I think getting back to the original question is, when aging is, help yourself along with that, accept what you can, fix, or
Yeah.
make better, and accept what you can't. And because aging is it's and I think the other thing is really stay social.
Stay social, yeah.
It's really difficult because I hear a lot of people in our age group or my age group that says that say they can't stand people, don't want to be around people, hate people, and enough with people. But I really think it's a component that's extremely important. It doesn't have to be all the time, but I think you do have to have some good friends, people you can call, people you can go out with, hang out, get your dose of social. I think it's really important as well. And just stay active, stay active, stay curious. And especially in today's day and age, I mean, you can be anywhere and just, up on your phone or pull out a computer and be on there a good amount of time, just reading and educating and taking courses and classes. That's what I do.
Yeah, no,
And it's out of
absolutely.
my life by myself. And I think that's the other thing too. And of course, I wrote the book, but I love being by myself, because I like who I am and I like who I've become. And I know I'm going to be a better person tomorrow than I am today, because I'm constantly trying to find that one thing I did today. Well, could have done that a little bit better. We're going to do that differently tomorrow. And it's not because I want to chastise myself. It's just because I want to keep, keep feeding all the good stuff, right? Keep feeding in all the good stuff. And so, yeah.
So you have written a book about it, and but has it always been that way? Has it always been that you were loving and kind to yourself, or was this was a
No.
process of discovery
Oh,
of learning?
no. Yeah, it was discovery because, as with, I think, 90% of the people I've ever spoken to, usually starts at home, and it starts with childhood. And so, what were you fed? What was, the familiar tribe all about? Remembering also that your parents only knew what they were taught, and when then they knew what they were taught, it goes back so many generations to what it is we find ourselves and how we think today, or from the teachings. And one of the things I learned really early on, or I thought very early on, that I wanted the toxic to stop here. Like, it had to stop with me. There was alcoholism in the family. There was violence in the family. So things that kids, really kind of come out of, well, like a great, dose of PTSD, going, what the hell is going
Right.
on here? And so you have to move forward in society with yourself and with others to learn what, first of all, what all that was. Like, what was all that?
Yeah.
And then get over it and understand that it wasn't about you. And that takes a minute,
Yeah.
because and that's where the reading and the books that I picked up came in really, really handy. My mother, for example, is a beautiful woman. She was, went to West Catholic Girls in Philadelphia. 800 girls graduated in her class. She was salutarian, so she was second place. She was on the dean's list every year. Beautiful woman and extremely intelligent. She graduated high school, and again, remember the Irish Catholic part, and that my her
Yep.
father was one of remember that her father was one of 16 children. So really,
16.
really Irish.
Wow.
Yep, really Irish Catholic.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a big number. Okay. All
Where
right.
my mother, with all this promise, right, in June of 58, she graduates high school, and she's pregnant with me in August of 58.
Yeah.
Mother, for all of my, of course, again, she became the black sheep of the family, and then I was born, and then everybody loved the baby, and she, it was a whole thing. There's a lot of dynamics going on there. But here's my mother, who said to me so many times, "Oh, don't take a picture of me. I couldn't. Oh, I come out horrible in pictures. Don't take a. I want to show you a picture of my mother when she was
Ah, oh, she's beautiful. She's
right.
beautiful.
She's
She's
a big girl.
the one, the blonde, the tall.
Yeah, I'm
Yes,
the
and
little
you're the
girl.
little one.
I'm
You're
the
the
little
little
girl."
one.
So mom was a lovely looking woman, a beautiful lady. She was 23 or 4 in that picture. But a woman that looks like that, this, oh, I look, I'm snow. And she was always worried about being, she was never heavy, but she had these preconceived things about, what it meant to be socially acceptable, and it was very hard for me as a child to see, because I didn't know what the heck was. My grandmother, another lovely looking woman in her 50s, I guess it was, she decided she didn't need to lose an ounce. Took two diet pills, swallowed them, choked on them, perforated her esophagus, and was in the hospital for 6 weeks. So I'm looking at these women that I look up to, and I just think they're the, I mean, they're everything to me.
Yeah.
And my their perception of themselves was not the perception that I had of them. And therefore, I think that that's where the quest for what's going on here, and then I learned about self-esteem, and I think that's really where it all started. So again, the message to women that I put out all this, be really careful what you're teaching your kids. Be careful what you're saying around them. And I talk also about, back in the day, there wasn't, there weren't, as we're not a lot of love between the Italians and the Irish back in the day. I think you remember there was a movie by the name of The Gangs in New York that would illustrate this.
Right.
And of course, my father, he had it in for the Italians. I don't know why, but he was Irish. And of course, every, all the worst Italian slurs that you could ever, my father used them all. And I thought that it was really funny. And one day, I don't know when the heck I figured, I went, oh my God, my father hated Italians. And I lived in Italy for 30 years. My mother had hated to have her picture taken. And I was a model. Like, my whole livelihood was being in front of a camera. It was so, honestly, having the courage to not be what the tribe says you need to be, right? So
Yeah,
moving.
did you did, now when how old were you when you put it together that you had done that contrarian work when you were like, my this was the
Hello. Let's
message
get
and I
back there. I was
moved.
probably in my 40s when I crap. I lived in Italy. My father hated Italians, and my mother never hated having a picture. I don't even know. I got that picture of her, the one I just showed you. I don't even know how
Yeah.
she did that, but she never wanted to have her picture taken. And she, I said, "Mom, you're just so damn smart." "Oh, I'm not smart. I'm not smart." I mean, here's the, as I said, Dean's List, salutarian, and all she ever did was pull her, bring herself down and pull herself down. So today I just feed her with all kinds of happy stuff. I mean, I tell her every day how fabulous she is. But I mean, but she didn't think that. She it wasn't, back in the 50s, I think it really wasn't a thing. Or she didn't come from that kind of family heritage. She just didn't, it wasn't there.
It wasn't there. Now, did she feed you with compliments or did you have to learn how to bolster yourself up? No. So
Oh, and
you
God
had to learn.
forbid you should give me a compliment.
Yeah. You
Bit.
can't be too prideful.
Can't be. And it was, don't tell her that, she'll become conceited.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't tell her she's pretty, she'll you're gonna make her, so
Right.
I had to kind of deal with that. And I've always kind of helped, I've tried to placate, as much as I could. And that was another dynamic, right? To be really careful, like making myself smaller so that it wouldn't upset people. Well, I had to get out, learn how to get all over that as well. So all the things that we go through in life, it's not just me. It happens to many of us, so many of us. And I love having these conversations because most women will come out and say, "Oh, I know, it happened to me too." It's great because you go, "Well, see, And that's why I underline and underscore again the importance of happy, healthy self-esteem. That is our sacred duty to continue to work on ourselves and our personal development, but not for our, necessarily only our greater good, which is extremely important, but for those around us as well. Knowing who to cut out, having the courage to do that, because toxic relationships have no place in our lives. And you can't fix everybody, and you certainly can't fix stupid.
Love it. All right. So I want to ask you this. I think this fits right into what you just said. One of the questions I came up with is, why do you think that it is probably helpful to share the story of boldly reinventing at 60?
Yeah, well, I mean, heck, because most women are told at this point we're supposed to be put out to pasture. There's not much else for us to do. Once the kids leave and we're empty, and I never had children, but we become empty nesters, and menopause has completely racked our bodies, and we've gained the weight, and we're losing the hair, and we're our skin is sagging, and all of those things that makes us less attractive. But I think the most important thing that we have to understand is that, do we really care about being the most beautiful woman in the room for the rest of our lives? Or is it really the most beautiful heart in the room that there are really some really great life lessons that we can leave with people in the room, should they, we'd be in a conversation or with them, or just the not the wisdom to just sit and listen.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where our power really lies, is being that powerful to be able to just sit and listen and maybe proffer a thought, an idea, a resource, whatever else. I think that that's I think that is an extraordinarily happy place to be. The place that, yeah, our bodies are not, we know that. We know that, we've known this for years, that this is going to be a phase that would sooner or later we'd be. And you know what? We're the lucky ones. If we get to be 60 or 70 or 80 years old, not everybody's a part of this club. Some people had to step out before that, and that's a shame, right? So we're still here. We need to be really happy to be here. And what is it that we're doing in our lives that really maybe potentially is helping to make a difference? Or is it just that you walk into the supermarket, I say hello to everybody. I mean, I know all everybody by name. And the people that I don't know, I'll smile at, or I'll say, please go ahead. The silly things in life, the little manners or mannerisms that really can make a win-win. I feel good about doing it. They feel good because you complimented them. Oh, I love that top. You look so great in that. Oh, this. Oh, thank you. I've never seen it before in my life. I'll never see her again. That kind of thing. So it sounds silly and maybe trivial. Of course, we can be doing much greater things. We'd be climbing mountains. We can do all the greatest things in the planet. Whatever we set our minds to, I still believe we can do. But it comes from a different place in space. It comes from a different knowing, and it comes from the wisdom that obviously we didn't have 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And we're not as smart as we're going to be in 10 years' time.
One of the things that I think is really amazing, and it ties back to you brought it together, the multimedia channel, is that I would love to be able to be having this conversation with you. You're in your 60s, I'm in my 50s, and I've got kids that are the youngest kid is in their 20s. And what's really interesting is I would love to be able to say that I don't think that the 20-year-olds are having the same, going to have the same issues when they hit 30, 40, 50. But unless we share the stories, they're not going to get ready. They're not going to be ready. The stories of, their changes are always out there. Aging is a gift, right? Like being able to age is a gift. There will come a time where you will look in the mirror and you will see your parents and not yourself.
Exactly. It's really great to share with the kids as well, as you say, and obviously it's a really big role. But it's also going to be on them to listen, or to take heed. And hopefully they do. And if not, then they'll learn on their own, much like we had to in so many occasions.
Oh, 100%. If you had talked to me when I was younger, there were things that I would say, I don't think they taught me this in school. I don't think they taught me this in school. And now I'm like, you know what? I've learned this about myself. It's very possible that this was offered to me in school, and I was in the back of the classroom talking and not paying attention.
Damn
It's very, very possible.
right.
All
So
right.
true. Yeah.
In a minute, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to tell people a little bit about what you do, how people can find you and your channels online, and connect with you.
Oh, okay. So it's Clarissa Burt. Clarissa Burt, pretty much straight across the board with all social. I'm not on Snapchat, but that's about the only one. Clarissa Burt, or Clarissa Burt Official, depending. But you can find me there. And my website's clarissaburt.com. The book, The Self-Esteem Regime, is in Barnes and Noble, and it can be found on Amazon, and pretty much everywhere. Also on Kindle and Audible as well. So no excuse,
All the places.
All the places,
All
exactly.
right. So, and for everybody listening and watching, I will put those links in the show notes. So they're in the podcast player and YouTube and wherever you are. The easiest way to get the links is obviously to be a part of the Imperfect Adulting email list. So then I include the links to the book and the social accounts, and you just click on them, easy peasy. Lemon squeezy. All right, Clarissa, are you ready
Yeah.
for the final rapid fire questions?
I am.
All right. Do you have a morning routine? And if so, do you want to share with us what it is?
Morning routine. Routine is I get up out of bed. I come and I open the windows in the house. I go to the kitchen and make a matcha latte, which I absolutely love. Matcha is green tea, so that's really, really good. And then I start. I have if I have the plants I have to water, I will do that. And then because I'm in the desert, I'm here in F Phoenix, and so we have to do that a little more. And then I sit down I'm at email. I mean, I'm on the computer pretty much all day. So I go through email, do what I have to do, and then I start working on the business, or I will take another course or class that I need to take.
Very nice. All right. So if I asked you to think back and pick one meal, just one, that you've eaten in a restaurant as the best one ever, do you think you could come up with one amazing?
It's really hard because I lived in Italy for 30 years, right? So, I am a huge lover of eggplant parmesan. Definitely tell you. Eggplant parmesan is my thing. I'm not a meat eater, so it's really difficult that I'll say chicken or beef, anything, because I don't. But I absolutely love eggplant parmesan. And I will also tell you that for a very huge part of my life, probably 40 some years, I was a sugaraholic. So I had to come off, get off of the sugar deal. I smoked for 30 years. I had to come off of I haven't smoked in 20 years, but all the things that we were talking about before about getting healthy, because when we were kids, that was a cool thing to do, to smoke. Now we know much differently, right? So
So
eggplant parm.
eggplant parmesan, which is definitely, I don't know if you make it at home, but parmesan
Sure.
is, it's one of those things I appreciate it when somebody else makes it because it's a messy process, all
It
the
is.
battering and frying. All right, so I'm going to ask you to finish this sentence for me.
Yes.
By the time a woman is 60, she should definitely dot dot dot.
She should definitely, if she hasn't already, she should definitely start to travel.
Ah, very
Absolutely.
nice.
Start to travel. If it's with a friend, great. There are also, if you have someone that can come along, you have a good friend, you can pile up and do it, great. And if not, there are websites that cater to just that. I had a couple of them that I think I've got somewhere saved for one of the groups that I'm going to be starting to do retreats for women. So I want them to know about this, and I want them to know that there are different websites out there that you can go to, sign up, get their newsletter, see what they're doing. I think they probably do Zoom calls, and you get into the community, and now you have women that you can travel with. If you feel like, oh, I'd go if I had a friend, but I don't want to go alone. Well, stop with that excuse, because we just debunked that.
No, there are a lot of solo travel groups that are specifically there, and it doesn't mean that you're out there just by yourself. It means that you're jumping in with a group and they take on the role of
So fun.
facilitating that. So,
So
which I
fun. Yeah.
think there's so many times that could be helpful. One, you're in a different phase than your friends. They're not ready to travel, or the people in your house don't want to do the things you want to
Right,
do.
right.
All of those things, exactly. All right, that is an amazing answer. That's it, Clarissa Burt. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.